everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every single week, I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously. But he's got a real big drink tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The biggest. A pint of everything I found in the fridge mixed together.
Got some pickle juice. Got some meat drippings. Mm-hmm. I got some gin, I think, in there.
Yeah, you want to get real heavy with the ice on this one, guys. Just you want to take as much of the taste out.
As cold as possible. Yeah. As cold as possible. If you can actually freeze the whole thing and just chip it into your mouth, mm-hmm. That's going to be the best way to go. Slide it right down. Oh, man. So we're recording on a Wednesday, which is atypical for us.
Mm-hmm.
We've Indeed. Been pretty busy. We've been busy boys.
Mm-hmm.
How's your week been?
It's been okay. We're getting a bunch of landscaping work done out front. Just exciting.
Did you get to, what's the deal with that pipe that exploded a few months ago? Have they like covered that?
They fixed that. Yep. The water company gave us poured a bunch of new concrete. That was great. And now we're getting the rest of the landscaping done to like make that not look as, make the one nice thing out front not look as much like a sore thumb as it did before.
It is always so bad when they do like one rectangle of sidewalk. They're like, mm-hmm. This one's going to look real great.
Yeah.
Now these over here, these are tobacco stained for reasons we don't really understand and cracked to shit. It's going to look real weird.
This one here is bulging by 6 inches. This one is just missing. We're not really sure where that one went. And this one was stolen. So that was basically
gone.
Yeah, it's just gone. But we're getting everything kind of brought up to the same level of quality-ish. So
that's nice. Well, you're outside of St. Louis City, obviously. So mm-hmm. when we were in St. Louis in the city, in our house, we had a tree-lined street, an old tree-lined mm-hmm. street. So the trees were just huge and therefore had big roots. Mm-hmm. And the sidewalk in front of our house, I don't know if you remember,
big bulge.
Lifted.
Yes.
One of the, totally out. Like it's at like a 45 degree angle.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous.
Very much a ramp. It's a ramp at that point.
It's an
exciting
Absolutely.
Ramp. Yeah.
And so eventually Aaron went on, she found this like place on the St. Louis website where you can report things like that to be fixed. And this was in fall of 2019. She goes onto the website and she fills out the whole paperwork and submits it. Mm-hmm. And she gets an automatic note. It's like, actually, someone has already reported this in fall of 2016. So we're on it.
No need to remind us. We are on it.
Okay. And they wouldn't let us submit a new request, even though it had been 3 years and they had not fixed it. And then, we moved out of there in 22. Mm-hmm. Still not fixed. Mm-hmm. So
I'll go check on it one of these days. I'll see what's going on.
Yeah, drive by. Let me know. Let me know how it looks.
Yep.
Just great. Your tax dollars at work, Frylock. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. You watching the DNC at all?
I'm not watching the DNC. I feel like it's watching a commercial for a product I already own. You know, like I'm gonna buy the vacuum. I don't have to keep watching the vacuum commercial. You know.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense. Now I will say, last night was a triple threat. They had Dougie Fresh
mm-hmm.
did a talk, and then Michelle, and then Barack, and. Jesus Christ. I mean,
and then
what a fucking try. I go ahead.
And, and you're not even mentioning the biggest guest of the night.
AOC,
Lil Jon.
Oh, turn down for what? I've watched that clip so many times. It is just so exciting.
I'm confused why you didn't lead, but Lil Jon.
I have it in my notes for later, actually. Yep. That was gonna be the climax of the story, but you've ruined it.
That's fine.
No, that's obviously the best part of the whole thing so far. But I have not heard Doug Emhoff speak really until his speech that we watched last night. Mm-hmm. I think I love, he's great. He is such a dork. And I love that. I feel so seen and represented. It's amazing.
You got to be a pretty good sport. You know, if you've, obviously you marry into somebody in politics, mm-hmm. and then But you're thinking, okay, well, that's your thing. You know, I'm an orthodontist or whatever, and you do politics.
What, an entertainment lawyer, I think?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the whole time you're
thinking, orthodontist of the legal world, for sure.
Right, sure, yeah. Yeah. You know, you do your thing, I do my thing. We come up at the end of the day, we trade interesting stories.
Totally.
You know, each have our own interests. But then your wife decides she wants to run for president and is doing pretty well, and they're like, hey, we need you to give a speech. And he's like, speech. Okay. You know, this was your thing, though. I mean, you're doing great.
Totally support you.
Really
support so happy you. To be second gentleman.
Yeah.
But speech.
Again, speech. TV, speech. So good for him. Good for
him. Well, he knocked it out of the park. But if you want, like, he's not, you know, he's not a speaker.
Right.
But he's just so darn cute.
You know who else I really feel for in this whole situation is Doug Emhoff's ex-wife.
Oh, man.
Like, can you fucking imagine?
Speaking as a divorced person, no. Man, I'll tell you this. I think if I were running for office, I don't think Paula would extend that courtesy to Aaron.
I really, yeah.
I just don't think so.
Oh, man. Like, I know they just talk about, oh, well, you know, we're very supportive. You know, we're a team here. And, you know, and Doug's ex-wife is, you know, super supportive. I'm like, yeah, I know she's super supportive, because if she wasn't, she would have killed herself as soon as you became the front runner for the president of the United States. Yeah, there's
not a lot of options here.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, I have so much respect for her, because that, you know, that has to be the hardest thing in the world. Yeah. But she's been steady and consistent. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Mm-hmm. The woman who's now married to my husband is great, and we get along well, and hope she becomes president, and Jesus.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm just imagining that trip to, like, the psychiatrist. Like, you know, maybe you just need to stop, just, you know, kind of try and block her out of your life. What is her name again? Her name is Kamala Harris, so that's going to be hard.
It's funny. That's she has the same name. That's so strange. Like, what a coincidence.
It's the lady president that we have. Vice president.
Yeah, that's a bad draw for her, for sure.
Yeah, so. A lot of Xanax. A lot of Xanax. I'd imagine just coursing through. That
prescription pad didn't stop flipping. Just script after script after script after script. Oh, man. Well, do you want to hear a ghost story?
Love to.
We have a good one tonight. This one it was suggested by a listener named Casey.
Ooh.
So thank you, listener Casey, for suggesting.
Spelling of Casey? What's the spelling of Casey? Is it letters?
K-A-S-E-Y.
K-A-S-E-Y. I know.
Is it? I'm sorry. Is it letters?
Right. Is it somebody who's spelled out
Would
their-
Would it be numbers?
K-C. Oh, I mean only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Sorry.
I could see in retrospect. Yes. Okay. I get your point.
It was confusing, and I've been concerned for you. If you smell toast at any point, please let me know so I can text Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So just delicious toast. Check.
Delicious toast.
Yeah. listener Casey, thank you so much. This is a good one. And oh shoot, not prepared. Hold on a second. I got do some filler.
Should I just describe what you're doing right now?
You nailed it.
Awesome. Cool.
Ding.
Ding. It's very quiet.
Ding.
Dong.
So quiet.
Oh yeah, hold on. I had turned it down because Maple came in while I was on a Zoom the other day and started pushing the buttons. I had to turn it way down. All right, I'll take it. Try it again.
Ding. Ding.
Ding.
Dong.
Nailed it.
Funny. And then, so she played that sound actually. And then she was like, is one of those you? And I said, yeah, one of them is me. She goes, who's the other one? And I said, the other ones are Patrick. And she like dissected, like, which one is you? Which one is Patrick? And I told her, I was like, so Patrick says ding, ding. And I say ding. And he says dong. And then for like 2 hours, Maple, like through dinner and into like bedtime, was like, daddy, listen, Patrick says ding, ding. And then you say ding. And then Patrick says dong. I mean, she would not stop.
Daddy, you're not the straight man, right? You're like, you would tell me if you were the straight man in the comedy duo, right?
Oh, don't embarrass me, Daddy. Please, please. Anyway, so that sound does mean that it's time for the story. So here we go. Edgar R. Butterworth. If I had waited half a second longer, you'd have a drink in your mouth.
You'll get the timing down. You'll get it. We're only 100.
As I was saying it, yeah. I saw you lift the glass. I thought, I've screwed this up so bad.
Edward, wait for it.
Oh. So close.
Maybe Butterworth used to be a more popular surname. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, the syrup comes from somewhere.
Right.
I sure. assume. Now, I always thought that it was like a play on pancake toppings.
Right. Yeah. It's, yeah. Like, make the butter worth it. Right.
Yeah.
But apparently this guy is probably not syrup based.
It did not come up in the research.
Okay. Fair
enough. And yeah. based on his complexion, I don't think there's a relation. I don't know.
That's fine. Yeah. we'll see if he's worth the butter by the time we're all done.
So Edgar R. Butterworth was born in 1847 in Newton Upper Falls in Massachusetts.
Ooh.
His family was classic American.
Clearly.
American classic.
Mm-hmm.
His grandfather served in the American Revolution. On the good side.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I guess they don't call it the American Revolution if you're on the bad side.
Yeah, yeah. And famously, most of those guys just went home after it was all said and done. So,
yeah, I guess that's true. Not a lot of them stuck around and had progeny. But this, you know, it's like how the people in the South will sometimes still call the Civil War the War of Northern Aggression.
Sure.
I guess yeah. you don't call it the American Revolution if you lost.
Right, yeah.
You call it the War of American Dipshittery or whatever.
The war of not fighting fair. That was what it was.
We were fighting real jerks.
Yeah. The war of hitting us with rocks from trees like dickheads.
The war of we didn't like it.
Every day during tea, shooting at us. Unbelievable.
They have no manners. No manners. So when Edgar was 10, his family moved to Minnesota, where his father worked as a millwright for 6 years.
Mm.
You know what a millwright does?
Mm.
I guess.
They work at the mill, right?
I'm sorry I asked. All right. Well. Now, this is a cool time to pick up and move to Minnesota for work because it was during the Sioux Wars.
All kinds of souvenirs were available to you.
Oh, man. And then in 1861, of course, the Civil War breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Edgar tried to enlist, but he was 14 years old. So they were like, and they were not picky. They would take people who were sure. not actually 18, but.
Right.
14 is like, we don't have crayons. We don't have, we can't, you're not going to color the other side to death. So they said no. Now, I don't know what happened to his father, but in 1863, the family moved back to Massachusetts and Edgar becomes the main breadwinner.
Hmm. How old is he at this point?
16.
16. Okay. It's about time.
Yeah. It's a little past due, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe his dad was fine. He's just like, finally, you're 16. I can relax.
Time for me to retire at age 34, and you get to do all this bullshit from now on.
Enjoy the golden years of my life, the last 3 years of my life, because it is 1863. So Edgar works as a hatter for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about the profession of hatter, other than they make hats?
Of haberdashery? I know.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit. I know many of them went quite mad.
Quite yeah. famously, really.
Famously mad. I guess that's probably the limit of it.
Do you know why they went mad?
It was something, some sort of chemicals for the curing of the hats or something like
that. I think it was lead related.
Is that right?
They like used to use lead as part of something.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I say this out loud, I should have Googled this before the podcast.
There's a step of this podcast where we kind of ask these questions and Google them.
Oh, mercury.
Mercury, not lead.
That's the one.
Mercury will drive you a lot crazier than lead, by the way.
Way crazier. Yeah. Ask Jeremy Piven.
Yeah. Fucking guy. Lead makes you really, really like disagreeable after about age 55, from my experience. Mercury
How is your dad?
Mercury makes you crazy as shit right from the gun. It's just...
Yeah, mercury nitrate was used to treat felt in order to toughen animal fur and make hats firmer.
Mm-hmm.
This process was called carroting.
Carroting.
Okay. C-A-R-R-O-T-I-N-G. But this is Google's AI overview, so let's... maybe it's true, but maybe not. Anyway.
That also sounds like maybe what one of the hatters had decided to call the process. Like after he'd been doing it for several years, like consuming unbelievable amounts of mercury.
As he's like trying to sew the hem with carrots.
This is called carroting. This is where we do the final carroting step where the carrots are carroted to the carrot. I'm sorry? What's...
Someone call the doctor. I think there's something wrong with the hats. So he was a hatter for a while. So that probably wasn't... I don't know if it was that bad for him, but I bet it wasn't good. So he was a hatter until he decided to become a lawyer.
Okay. Quote,
despite a limited formal education.
I think we've gone over this on the show before. A lawyer was just the person in town that bought the book, I believe, yes, was the rule.
That's exactly right. So a couple years later, then he marries Grace Whipple. Now, Grace has descended from a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, wow.
So okay. She's also classic American.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Grace does die 2 years later after bearing a child whose name was Gilbert M. Butterworth.
Man. What kind of like Lemony Snicket villain is this?
Oh, God. So in 1873, Edgar and Gilbert move to a little town called St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey!
Like, so many people in the 1800s ended up in St. Louis for a while.
It was a bit of a hub there. No longer, but it was a hub.
How's it feel now? Pretty exciting?
Pretty much like a crater, I'll be honest. But, you know, back then... Meteor hadn't come close to hitting this town yet. So,
No.
It was great.
No. So he moves to St. Louis in 1873, where he once again becomes a hatter. So, ingest more of that mercury. Which, again, I will say, not impossible then that you could go to an antique shop or a thrift store somewhere in St. Louis and find a hat made by Edgar Butterworth. I think it's worth a shot.
Mm-hmm. So you find any old carrots inside of it? And if so, you're probably...
You've ingested a lot of mercury that day. So he's in St. Louis. He's a hatter. And then he remarries. He marries a woman named Maria Gillespie. Now, they scoot out west pretty quickly. They get out of St. Louis, and they move to Fort Scott, Kansas.
Oh, I know Fort Scott well.
Do you?
I do, indeed. I have a...
How?
I work with the company in Fort Scott. I have been there several times.
Yes. Would you like to describe it?
There is one diner in town. I do not remember the name of it. It is delicious.
But the New York Times is there constantly asking people what they feel about the economy.
There's one guy in a bar stool and it's a line of reporters. Like, can I use that quote or do I need to wait for you to say it a second time and attribute it?
Yeah, it seems like it's in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, which to be fair is most of Kansas, but
super middle of nowhere.
I just wonder, like, I don't know what brings you to Fort Scott, Kansas today. I guess, there's obviously some industry there. Like in the 1870s, like what the fuck is in Fort Scott?
I mean, a fort, I assume.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe.
Yeah. The fort industry grows up around it. You know, a lot of fort support activities, you know.
Fort support.
Mm-hmm. Fort maintenance.
Sure. Fort planting.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for about a year or two, but then they're like, this is not right. This is a mistake. And they head down to the rangelands of Southwest Kansas, which is even more remote.
Ooh, yes. Absolutely.
We've taken a trip through fucking rangelands of Kansas. I have never in my life been as bored as I was on our road trip once we left Lawrence,
right,
and until we got to the Rocky Mountains. Jesus Christ, it's just There is not a single point in that many hour drive where if you put a marble on the road, it would roll anywhere. Not a single point. So they move to Southwest Kansas, and Edgar then becomes a cattleman.
As you do. Sure.
You can do anything. Mm-hmm. You can do anything in the 19th century. Just be whatever you want. So he comes to cattleman, and here's a quote. He also hauled the bones of dead bison 125 miles to the nearest railroad, where he received $10 per ton.
Hauling a ton of material. Now, I want to break this down miles. A little bit. This is an unbelievable task.
There's so many elements here that I think we need to spend some time parsing through.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, the bones of dead bison, which...
I imagine there's a lot of them, right?
Yes. I am curious,
is
he waiting until it's just bone? Is he going through and, like, you know, pulling the gristle off the bone?
Sure.
You know, that's more of a curiosity thing, not a logistics thing. Mm-hmm. But then 125 miles.
Oh, man.
With a literal ton of bison bones, and bones are not that heavy.
Right. Yeah. They're not super, super dense. Also, I mean, just to get, again, to get into the kind of mechanics of it, I don't see them stacking well. I really don't.
No, you definitely have to like bundle them together, like tie like all the femurs together, and then tie the horns together, and then you tie the other bones together.
And this teeny tiny bag here, just the little finger bones is all this is down here.
Little toesies in this bag. So what do you, and I'm so curious, and I should have looked this up, but I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think bison bones are used for?
I'm wondering if this is tied to the classic trying to exterminate the bison to drive the Native Americans out. So and this is basically the government paying for the bones of bison to encourage more people to kill bison.
Why wouldn't you do like hides? Because bones are like, that's tough to get bones.
Okay, that's fair.
Either wait a long time or do a lot of hard work.
That's true. That's true. I don't know. What would bison bones be used for? Like a really cool fort, right?
I mean, that would, sure. I mean, cards on the table, really that would cool. be a yeah. really cool fort.
But I mean.
I don't agree with it, but it would be a really cool fort. But
once you build that fort, I don't really know what else you do with the bones. I got to imagine a lot of people are in this trade.
I know. Second fort.
Okay, everyone gets their own fort. Okay, all right. Okay, I get that. Yeah,
a little reductive, but still. So he's hauling the dead bones, 125 miles a ton, and he receives $10 per ton. So I did the math. Would you like to guess how much $10 in 1873 is today?
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna hope it's like $1,000.
I'm gonna tell you, it's not as much as you'd like.
Oh no.
It's worth about $300.
Oh my God. $300 to haul a ton of bones.
Well, first to gather a ton of bones and then to haul a ton of bones 125 miles. And you got to go back 125 miles. This is a bad business plan.
Oh.
Actually, feels like the government was like, okay. We've done the hide thing to make sure that we're, you know, doing everything we can to wipe out the indigenous people. And, you know, people are going to take the meat because they like the meat. But it does discourage growth to see just a bunch of bones everywhere. Right. Like, it would be nice if someone would clear them. Now, we don't have a lot of budget for this, but surely there are people out there who will take $10 for, I don't know, how many pounds of bones? And one guy's like, what if we do a ton? And they're like, no.
No one will ever do that. No one's that dumb. Well, we'll try it. We can come down later.
We can always come down. Yeah. All right, we'll try it. Holy shit. It's working.
What do we do with all of these bones now?
$300 for a literal ton. Of not dense bones. I mean, how you transport that shit. Anyway, he's doing jobs, obviously. He's doing odd jobs. Yeah. He's a cattleman, he's a bone collector. And new quote, there on the plains of Kansas, he also had his first occasion to make a coffin.
Of bones?
I mean, if he's not doing that, he's really missing out on a cool opportunity.
Yeah. Eventually, he's like, what if I'm sick of hauling them. I like collecting them. That's really the best part. But the hauling, I'm souring on the hauling. What if I built something really, really morbid from the bones?
What if we had a mausoleum that's the size of the tower in Pisa? And it's just bones. And inside is just bodies that then become bones. Mm-hmm. And then you take those bones, make a taller mausoleum.
This idea pays for itself almost immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so simple. So he was traveling on his wagon one day, and he comes across a settler who was grieving his wife and his newborn child who had both just died. Mm-hmm. And there was no lumber available because this is fucking the plains of Kansas. There are no trees.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got bones. So Edgar makes him a coffin out of his own wagon.
Oh no. This is, again, kind of a gift of the Magi type thing. I'm not to, it's been a few episodes, but
it's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while since we've owed Henry'd something, but,
and now I am grieving because I don't know what the fuck to do with 2,000 pounds of bones that were in the wagon.
I was going to give them to your baby to gnaw on, to teethe, and now your baby's gone. But
yeah. Your baby's gone. How inconvenient for me.
So he makes him a coffin out of the wagon, and he makes a coffin, and he looks at it, and he thinks, huh.
That was easy.
I'm pretty good at this. This could be something. This could be something.
Yeah. What is everybody in Kansas doing right now? Dying.
Ding. Light bulb.
You got the captive audience, right? I mean, not a whole lot of competition, and people get pretty loose with the spendy spree.
Oh, man. So in 1881, the Butterworths move all the way west.
Oh.
To Washington State.
Oh, wow. Goodness.
So, which I don't, that trip is, that's not easy. Easy now. It's definitely not easy then.
Straight up and then straight down for like a week.
And cold, and you're eating half of the people you're traveling with, if I remember my history.
And you're like, man, I wish I would have brought some of the meat from the bones, honestly. Like, why did I leave it? Why did I leave it? I still brought the bones.
Turns out I was in paradise. We could make so much broth. Yeah. So much broth. And now we have no broth. What a waste. So he went there thinking he would be a cattleman there.
Sure.
And I don't know, like, what. I don't know why. Like, if he's doing a job that, you know, whatever. Mm. I mean, I'm sure he's like, Kansas sucks. We have to go.
Right. The only thing I like doing here is making boxes for the people that die here. It's creeping me out.
I'm starting to think that maybe I need a change of scenery.
Yeah.
So he goes to Washington thinking he could be a cattleman there, but he gets there, and then once he's there, realizes that there's no cattle, because, I don't know if you know this, but no one is driving cattle at this point over the fucking Cascade Mountain.
Right. Yeah. that's not a real efficient way to get him over there. You pretty much just want to start him over there and then just let him go.
You want to bring like an egg, a cow egg over there. You grow one cow and then you hope it multiplies. It lays more eggs and then you have it. part of me wonders, I think we talked about this before. If you're in the 1800s, obviously there's no like video, there's no, you know, that multimedia is not a big thing. If you hear stories about the Rocky Mountains, you're probably like, oh, those are pretty big mountains. Mm-hmm. But, don't joke it. But then, like, once you fucking, even today, like, once you see the Rockies, you're like, holy shit. This is, I don't know what this is. This is the North Wall in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Like, I'm stunned when I see them, and I'm in a car that easily ascends and descends them. Right. Can you imagine if you're, like, dragging all of the shit you own on your fucking back? And you're okay, what is that, 2 miles straight up and then straight back down? All right, fine.
It's like, I'm in a plane. I'm going over them. I'm so much higher than them. And I'm looking down at them. And Jesus Christ, those are huge mountains.
You're standing there with your cousin Jethro, like, just set the couch down for a second. Just, I need to think about this for a minute. I don't know if we want to go over that.
for reference, I keep looking. So, you know, we're in the we're now between the Blue Ridge and the Alleghenies, and you can see them both, you know, from our place. Mm-hmm. And they're big mountains. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we drive up in them, and they're big. So I, every once in a while, I look up, like, you know, what's like an average elevation of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it's something like 4,000 feet or 3,000 mm-hmm. feet, which is a lot,
big,
because I'm seeing them up. It's fucking huge. I can tell mm-hmm. you with my eyes, that's mm-hmm. a lot. But then you look at the Rockies, and it's like, these are 12,000 feet. These are 13,000, 14,000. It's just unbelievable. So I don't fault him too much for mm-hmm. thinking cattle might be over these mountains.
Sure. Yeah. But it does make a lot of sense why the city of Denver exists, though. It's okay. For
sure. Yeah. Psych. We'll stop here. You know what? Ocean. I don't even like oceans. Yeah. We'll just stop here. This is fine. So there's no cattle industry. So that's not ideal for him. Mm-hmm. He's gonna switch gears again.
Yeah. But he has two other skills, right? He's been building up two other skill trees this whole time, right? Mm-hmm. So just pivot, right?
Yeah, he's going to pivot. He's going to do that. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to rely on one of his his two skills of bone gathering or coffin building. Mm-hmm. He's going to build the first ever steam-powered flour mill west of the Cascades.
Okay, maybe he was a hatter for too long. I think this is...
I don't know, but I feel like this is kind of like when Aaron and I started the coffee roastery. It's like... Mm-hmm. Let's just roast coffee now.
Sure. I like doing this thing. So let's do it professionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never done this before. Let's mm-hmm. make a business out of it. So I get it. Mm-hmm. So he does that. The next spring, the Butterworths move to Centerville, mm-hmm. which you might know now as Centralia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they move to Centralia. And there, Edgar sets up a small furniture business. For the living, I should say.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Just to clarify, yeah. And in Centralia / Centerville, he serves as a member of the first city council of Centralia. Hmm. Then he becomes the mayor of Centralia.
Okay.
And then he serves two terms in the state legislature.
What an exciting time to be alive. Can I just say that?
You could do anything.
You literally show up in town and they say, hey, what's your name? Fake name. Oh, what do you do for a living? Fake occupation. Do you have experience
doing
that?
Do you want to own us?
Yes, I do.
Do you want to run everything that we do?
You seem to have survived for longer than the average person. You must know what you're doing.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. So he just takes over this part of the state. Now, so he's serving in the state legislature. And during that time, an epidemic of black diphtheria.
Oh, fuck.
It's the region.
I don't even really want to know. Oh. I think if I showed up at a concert and they were like, and now the opening act, Black Diphtheria. I would put in a mouth guard and a helmet and get ready to get fucked up.
Catcher pads everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Body. Oh my God. Black Diphtheria. Do I want to know?
It's the name actually is worse than the diagnosis in this one specific case, but not much worse. Here's a quote. It refers to a gray to black coating that can appear in the throat, nose, or airway mm-hmm. of someone infected with diphtheria.
Mm. Boring. They wasted it.
This coating, also known as a pseudomembrane, is made up of bacteria and dead cells and can block airways, making it difficult to breathe or swallow.
So you choke on your own dead cells.
Isn't that ironic?
All right. Okay. All right.
Those cells are taking you with them. Yeah. For sure.
I'm back on the black diphtheria chain. That's fine.
Great. So black diphtheria hits the region, and you know, it's ripping through the population, and this is not a time of medicine, and one thing leads to another, yada, yada, yada. Suddenly, there is a very urgent need for coffins.
Where before we turn our swords into plowshares, now we turn our futons into coffins.
It's just economical. Reduce, reuse, recycle is our motto. Now this is, quote, which is the point at which he effectively entered the undertaking business.
Oh, no. What?
He knows how to make coffins.
Well, sure. Man. Why wouldn't he know how to suck the blood out of people? I mean, well, okay. That's probably a connection most of us would make. That's fair.
He's not a vampire.
But you could sell it, you know. You
sell what?
As if they're like, oh, well, what are your credentials as an undertaker? Well, I make coffins for a living. Okay, fine, creep. That's fine. Yeah, you can suck the juices out of people then, I guess.
I don't. Oh, you're saying as an undertaker you should suck the blood out.
Yeah,
I thought you were suggesting that maybe you could cure diphtheria by sucking the blood out of someone. And I had a lot of questions.
Absolutely not. As the first rule of undertaking is you do not actually suck the juices out of the people. You want to use a steam-powered pump and just... Pow.
This is the city slickers rule. You don't suck anything out of anyone.
Not in those days.
Okay. All right. So he becomes the undertaker because no one else knows how to make a coffin. Mm. Now I don't know how skilled he is at the other aspects of undertaking, but he makes a mean coffin and they need those. Mm-hmm. So he becomes the undertaker and this makes him pretty wealthy.
Sure.
Well, he's got it's a cornered market. Mm-hmm. And in 1892, Edgar Butterworth moves the family again. This time they move to the big show. They go to Seattle.
Wow. There's a lot of moving around, you know?
Yeah. It's weird that someone who is interested undertaking and death and making money off of that would find himself needing to move around a lot. So he buys a controlling stake in a company called Cross and Company. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Cross and Company Undertakers.
Ah, okay.
Weird line break. Yeah, that's better. That makes more sense. Cross and Company Undertakers, which stood on the northeast corner of 2nd Avenue and Pike Street. Mm-hmm. So this is you've been to Seattle, obviously. We've been there together. So you will know this is it's close to the Pike Market.
Yeah, Pike's Place Market.
Pike's Place Market. Mm-hmm. So that's where they are. So now that Edgar owns a controlling stake, he renames the company, and he calls it E.R. Butterworth and Sons.
But nothing about the undertaking.
No. It's implied.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess you move into the neighborhood, you want to kind of stay on the down low about what you're doing behind the scenes. Like, oh, a new business movie in town. Oh, is it a coffee shop? I'm not sure what it is.
Let's go check it out.
It just says Butterworth. It sounds delicious.
What do you do here? Hold on one second. Let me check your pulse. Let me check your eyes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, are you feeling we'll see fine? You soon. Yeah. Yeah. is that a dark roast? Yeah, that's that is a dark roast we got going right now.
It's so dark. Yeah. So dark. Yeah. So. So he renames it, and he has, at this point, he has 5 sons.
Okay.
Or I think maybe more, because 5 of his sons join him in this business. Maybe he has more. He's got kids. He's got kids.
Yeah.
This dude loves to fuck. And 5 of his sons join him in the business. And those sons are Gilbert, the OG.
Of course, yeah.
Charles, Frederick, Harry, and Benjamin. Now they go on as a family to be very successful. Mm-hmm. By the end of the 1920s, E.R. Butterworth and Sons was already the longest running single family held funerary business in Seattle.
Wow. Put that in the brochure.
Seems easy. Yeah. <That's>... but it remained in the Butterworth family until 1998.
Wow. Oof.
So
which of his sons fucked that up?
Well, let's see if we can find out. So the business is doing really well. As business grows, so does the need for space. So they move buildings several times. Mm-hmm. And in 1903, they land in the building that we are going to focus on for this story. 1921 First Avenue, which is just about one block away from Pike Place Market.
Oh, wow. Okay. Near the original Starbucks as well.
It's actually, it butts up behind the original Starbucks. It's
really? Like
exactly behind the original Starbucks.
I know exactly where this building is.
We must have seen this building.
We had to walk past it like three times on that trip easily.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the building is. does Gloria think that if she walks quickly?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It is the best.
Woo.
Hello, goddaughter. Love you.
Oh my god. Yeah, for anybody not watching the YouTube, you can just fast forward to I don't know what's this 40-ish minutes and watch me poop my pants.
I'm sorry, I forgot that you don't see the view that I see.
Yeah, I'm focusing on your camera feed, obviously, not my own. I have matured after 100 and God knows how many episodes to not watch my own video.
Outstanding.
Oh.
Go subscribe to YouTube, friends. It's worth it.
Anyway, where were we?
Anyway, do you need to go change your clothes or anything?
Are
you
okay? No, it's fine. I can ride it up.
Okay, great. So they're in 1921 First Avenue, just behind the Starbucks. And they call this building the Butterworth Block. And this is Seattle's first custom-built modern mortuary.
Oh, ooh.
Before this, they're just putting bodies in fucking fish houses or whatever. Yeah.
Got a few slits in the floor and let it drain out to the sea, and that's...
And then you catch fish in that sea and you eat them. It's circle of life. Circle of life. Exactly. but it's actually a pretty good building as far as mortuaries go. It's pretty forward thinking for the time. It was the first building on the entire West Coast that had an elevator.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty important for a mortuary, right?
Yes. I mean, that's key.
Like so, that's,
So and the way it worked is they would roll in the bodies from the alley.
Right, yeah, a little discreet.
Into the elevator and then down, yes. So the alley, and the alley actually is the alley with the famous gum wall.
Oh, remember the gum wall? Yeah, I remember the gum wall, yes.
Yeah, and I think their door for this building is actually like right next to the gum wall.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we definitely have had...
We may have
actually gone into this building. I don't remember, but it's entirely possible.
We tried a lot of doors in the gum wall alley, and some were open and some weren't.
So this was first building on the West Coast to have an elevator. It's full of stained mahogany and art glass. It's ornamental plaster.
Very tasteful.
It's brass and bronze hardware. It's quite tasteful. It also, of course, has a body storage room. But this body storage room is fireproof.
Oh,
which is new for the time, because usually they're using like repurposed buildings to store bodies.
Okay, sure. Yeah, but I mean, fireproof.
Yeah, what if you don't want your loved one to be cremated?
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm thinking to myself, okay, if this building burns down,
yeah,
I don't want to be like, is my dead husband okay? I mean, it doesn't really matter at that point, right? It's...
I mean, it might. Yeah. I mean, presumably at that point, maybe several other people have died, and that is tragic. But I think you're like, you know, Ron didn't want to go out like that.
Yeah. Now, Ron,
how's Ron doing?
Who has already gone out, technically.
Yeah, you don't want to go out twice. That's, right. I mean, insult to injury.
But yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. If they have the crematorium running as well. Fire safety probably pretty important.
I think that's probably why it was, because otherwise it's like, why don't you make the whole building fireproof? Maybe
why don't they make the whole building out of the black box?
What if the waiting room is fireproof? Yep. That sounds good. So yeah, I assume it's to keep the cremation in the cremation room. Now, the basement is accessible indeed through Post Alley, which is home of the famous gum mall. Here, I'm going to show you some photos of this building. I'm going to show you a photo that is contemporary to the time. Mm-hmm. And then I'll show you a photo of what it looks like now. If I can make this work. And yes, I can. So here is... So it's this building right here.
Okay, with the fake horses in front?
I think those are real horses. Boy, those look
fake. Those look so fucking fake. I'm sorry.
These are like 1918 horses. That's just how they were.
Were they two-dimensional?
Yeah. They were drawings of horses, and how you knew they were real.
They look like very tasteful stickers of horses that were added to the photo later.
This could be an early Photoshop. It's not impossible.
Could be. Yes. Okay. God, yes.
These old horses are amazing.
Oh, man. I would kill to be taken out in a hearse like that. Just have,
I tell you what, man.
Have those two show ponies drag me down to, you know, I-270 in the middle of rush hour.
Just glass on all four walls.
Cooking in the sun.
Oh. It's amazing.
Oh, I want you to take all of the money I have left when I die and spend it on the stupidest funeral I possibly
can. I thought you wanted us to flush you down a toilet.
I've changed my mind. It has been a long podcast. I've changed my mind. I want this one now.
All right, let me text Amy. Hold on a second.
And I want all those weird guys with scimitars following the hearse. I don't know what their job is. I mean, I want them involved too.
Where do you even get these swords? I don't know, but
and so many.
That's cool. That's a cool fucking funeral.
Yeah.
I don't even want to be buried. I want to be cremated or maybe shot into space is my actual ideal or turned into mulch. But I think before you do that, I would love to be carted around in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So that's what it looked like then. Here's what it looks like now.
I guess. It's like a firehouse
It's very Ghostbusters headquarters. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Typical for Seattle, it is currently raining in the photo, which is great. It means like they waited to take the photo until it wasn't raining, and eventually they're like, fuck it, just take the photo anyway. it doesn't matter.
It's a blog, who cares? But it's very well preserved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Beautiful building. Beautiful building.
So that is it. So that is the block, as they say. Let's see. So it had a coffin showroom, had a private reception area, mm-hmm. also had a consulting room. It's perfect for when people die. Just great. Now, it was really important to Edgar that they could serve anyone, regardless of social or economic status. So he mm-hmm. had coffins that ranged in price from $25 all the way up to $200, which I think is good.
Yeah. Pretty fair.
Yeah.
Equitable.
Yes. The initial DEI hire, for sure. And he was also known to sometimes, and actually with regularity, I think, to forgive the debts of people who weren't able to pay for the services.
I think that's nice. Also, if you're making 200 bones off of a coffin, I think you can afford to have some freebies going out.
Yeah, so, and if you're a little short this year, you just go kill some buffalo and you get to drag a ton of their bones and you get $10. There's always ways to make money.
I can't afford the $25 coffin, but I do have 5,000 pounds of bison bones in the parking lot right now. Will you take them in trade?
Sold.
Absolutely.
So the company's doing great. Edgar buys the first hearse north of the Columbia River.
I really question a lot of these.
Tied them to the backs of horses and just dragged them to the dirt.
I really question some of these designations. Like, who is keeping track? Are the Guinness people around at this point?
Yeah, I don't really understand. Yeah. They know. Come on, they know. Come on.
Like, as soon as you drag this hearse north of the river, do you like lean over to the kids? Be like, hey, kids, guess what? You are riding in the first hearse.
I am. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. You're also dead. Yeah. I hate to be the one to tell you it was terrible and tragic. So, you're very young, but
it's not technically a hearse until one of us is hearse worthy, let's say. So if we want to set the record, one of y'all is going to have to. I have some straws here in my hand. Please.
Right now it's a glass wagon, but I think with a little help, it can be a hearse.
I heard you coughing earlier. Actually, very suspicious. Maybe you should draw the straws last, and we'll just decide.
So he's doing great. He also is often credited as the likely coiner of the terms mortuary and mortician.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which then makes him responsible for the name of Morticia Adams.
Oh, my gosh.
I think, which is pretty good.
If he could only
a big deal.
If he could only fast forward about 75 years, he would have been swimming in it. Know what I mean? Oh, you know,
yeah, I think I do. Oh, man. And gosh, I don't have my wham here. Do you want to do a wham?
No, I don't.
Fun fact.
Wham!
He also helped organize the Seattle Lodges of the Independent Order of Odd Fellows.
Oh, thank goodness. They have returned.
For 10 iTag points, Patrick, do you remember which episode we discussed the Odd Fellows?
Absolutely not. But it was one of my favorite episodes.
Was it?
Was. Sounds like it. Oh, my goodness. God, I love the Odd Fellows.
That was episode 53, Belvoir Winery, which we recorded live at Pickney Bend Distillery.
Okay. I'm about in the same state I was in when we recorded that, so I'm surprised I didn't remember it. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
But of course, even undertakers must eventually be undertook.
Mm.
I think is how you say that. And poor Edgar R. Butterworth dies on January 1st, 1921. Whew.
Man, what a rich life. He did literally all of the jobs. He did
all of them. Every single thing he could do.
He was born
in that time frame.
On the East Coast. He did every job there was all the way out to Seattle. And then poetically ended his life, you know, as a mortician. It is, it's a beautiful story. It really is.
He did it. He did it. He lived the dream.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I would love to see Timothy Chalamet represent him in film someday. I really would.
So you think Edgar Butterworth is a small
foppish
wee man?
Yeah, with very
slight,
foppish.
Slight bones.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet is not carrying a ton of bison bones.
But I want to see it. Miles. I want to see it. That's all I want to see in this whole movie. That's the montage I want.
It's him rolling up his sleeves and looking so tired and dirty, but so determined.
That little twerp from there. Dune, dragon bones. 6 solid minutes.
But you must drag them in an irregular way.
Yeah.
Or so else the worms of the plains will hear you.
So as not to summon Shai Halud.
So he died. Boy,
sometimes real dorky. I'm sorry.
Nerdy, real dorky. Real Doug Emhoff energy here on this episode today. And I celebrate that. A couple years later, then, the family, again, there were 5 sons who took over the business. Family moves the business out of the Butterworth building, and they move it somewhere else.
Yeah, for some suburb for tax breaks. I'm familiar
with how that works. Yeah, you get it.
Sure, yeah.
They moved it into the ocean because can't tax us if we're on on maritime tax law. So while it was a mortuary, obviously there were dead people coming through all the time, and most of those people had died of natural causes. A lot of them had disease.
Sure, like black diphtheria, of course. Just a famous...
yeah, that ripped through a couple times, I think. As we've learned on this podcast, disease can be good fodder for making ghosts.
It's not sure
the best, but it can be.
It's not murder.
It's not murder. So, which brings us to the early 1900s, when Edgar was still alive, there was a doctor in Seattle named Dr. Linda Hazard.
Really?
I don't know if there has ever in the history of humanity been a more appropriate name for a human being on the planet than Dr. Hazard. So here's a picture of her.
Oh, so it's not great that this is a mugshot, right? For the rest
Correct.
Of the story?
Yes. Okay. I'm glad you picked up on that. Yes. That's really key.
And kind of, and a little smug too. I would call this a smug shot. Really, this is. She's not ashamed of whatever she's done.
No, she's going to put this on a t-shirt and say "fight, fight, fight."
Yeah, yeah.
I think is what's going to happen soon here, for sure. So that's Dr. Hazard, and boy was she. So Dr. Hazard was a licensed, quote, fasting specialist.
Okay. This seems like a bit of leech work to me. Is it similar to leech work?
It's not too dissimilar. in the sense that she thought you could cure diseases with starvation.
Okay.
So, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, great. I'm glad you're on board. Okay, cool. In 1908, she publishes a book called Fasting for the Cure of Disease.
Oh, okay.
Her patients were allowed to have one bowl of vegetable broth each day.
Mm-hmm. It's fair.
And of sustenance.
Oh, okay.
But they were also given up to 3 enemas.
Oh, no.
Per day.
Oh, man.
What do you want to drive out disease in the body?
What is there to enema after the second one? I mean,
you're That's just... the whole point. You're going to get out all that disease, and eventually, it's all gone.
No, those are all my humors. Get them back. I'm not sure what humors come out the anus, but they're got to be critical.
I mean, it could be all of them, play your cards right. So they're eating one bowl of broth a day, and they're getting up to 3 enemas a day. So it may be shocking to hear this, but quite a few of her patients ended up in the Butterworth mortuary. Mm. And as a side note, Linda Hazard has one of the best Wikipedia pages I have ever seen. I encourage you all to go look it up. At the time of this recording, at least, here is a first sentence. Linda Laura Hazard, nicknamed the Starvation Doctor, was an American quack, swindler, and convicted serial killer, noted for her promotion of fasting, pummeling, and hours-long enemas as treatments.
Hours-long enema. That's, again, if that band is opening hours for Black Diphtheria.
That's a time, man. That is a time.
That is a bill right there, man. I am.
You tell Amy to get the stretcher ready because you're coming home late.
Oh, my God. Oh, although, man. Frankly, you know, the Starvation Doctor probably makes for pretty quick undertaking. Like, the mortician's like, there's not a lot for me to do here. This is...
You've taken all the fluids, actually, so that is helpful.
This is just bag 'em and tag 'em work here. This is not difficult. This is...
well, put a pin in that, because we're gonna talk about a version of that pretty quickly here. So, in 1911, Dr. Hazard was found guilty of manslaughter for killing at least, and that is emphasized, at least 15 people.
Oh, no.
She was released, but she was released on parole after 2 years.
Honest mistake. I'm going to write a new book. I have a new book coming out. It's called 2 Bowls of Broth and 1 Enema. That's the name.
The enema equation is what they're calling that one. So she's released on parole 2 years, but in 1916, the governor of Washington State, he decides he's going to give her a full pardon.
Oh, okay.
But on one condition. Hmm. That condition is she moves to New Zealand.
I like this. Okay.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Look, listen, we can be cool here, but you've got to go to New Zealand and never come back.
New Zealand is such a, like, spin the globe and stab your finger into it type location, too.
It's like, if we send her to Australia, that's, like, too obvious. Like, people will be like, oh, you're just doing what they used to do here, and it's going to be sending prisoners to Australia. Yeah. What's different than that? Oh, I don't know, New Zealand. So that's what happens. So she goes to New Zealand, and she lives a free person there. And here's a banger sentence from that Wikipedia page. Hazard died at 70 after subjecting herself to her treatment methods.
Oh, no. Healer, heal thyself. I am afraid.
And once again, I do recommend every single person listening go and find Dr. Linda Hazard's Wikipedia page. It is real great. And one little coda on Dr. Hazard's story. When she was convicted of the crime, so Butterworth and Sons was implicated in some of the deaths, quote, because they had cremated one of her victims and then produced a different and less emaciated body for the funeral.
Who we gotten back? You got that one? Yeah, bring that one
too
guy.
Too fat. Yeah. Nah, too skinny. Nah, Who we got? nothing ever came of that for them, so they never officially did anything wrong, but it's not a good look. Mm-hmm. also, there were rumors, and I will say just there were rumors that Butterworth and Sons would sometimes bury empty coffins because they had sold the bodies.
Oh, that's not great. I mean, but again, if you want to tie it all back in, mm-hmm. How many dollars per bone is he getting for these bodies?
And if the bone has some meat on it, I mean, that's probably fine, right? Actually, so I was this week has been full of welcome back to campus meetings.
Sure.
For my school. And, you know, for me, it's my first week at this school.
Weird segue, but yeah, let's go. Yeah, sure.
Well, you'll understand in a second. So I was in a meeting yesterday and like before the meeting started, it was like small subgroups. Like we broke out into, you know, so it was like 10 people in this meeting, in this room. And while we were waiting for everyone to show up, people were just doing a small talk. And one of the small talk topics was, so we have a school called Murphy Deming, which is, they have like nursing programs and they're starting maybe a PA program soon. And
oh, cool.
It's, you know, medical stuff, obviously not doctors, but
your sister and my sister.
Correct. Both. Yep, right. Yep. Actually, they already offered my sister a job. They've never met her. I just told them that she's a PA in St. Louis, and they're like, does she want a job?
Does she like mountains? We have several.
So if Kelly's looking to move to Virginia, actually, I think I genuinely think I could get her a job teaching, if that's interesting to her. So let me know. So there were people from Murphy Deming talking, and one of them was like, you know, oh God, we're budget issues, and you know, of course we're all making sacrifices, but you know, one of the biggest things that hit us is we're having a hard time getting cadavers now. And someone else is like, oh, hard time with cadavers, like you know, how hard is it? He's like, you can't find any, you can't get them. And the other person's like, well, you could, what if we give you more money, like you can buy a cadaver, right? Like they're expensive. He's like, well, they cost about $6,000, but it's not like the prices will fluctuate like a free market. It's just, there's just not enough cadavers. And they were like, the person was like, but like, if you had a bigger budget, you could get cadavers, right? And the guy's like, no, it's not really how it works. Like, it's just, there's just, we have money to buy cadavers for that. We just don't, there's not. And this person was like, but like, should we talk about increasing the budget? Because like, surely you could outbid someone for cadaver.
Let's take this conversation offline. Like
and I am just sitting there just in love with this place.
like the spot by market. Like if I really need cadmium right now, if I outbid this guy for cadmium, I can get it. Right. Mm-hmm. But at some point there's not enough dead bodies to satisfy everybody.
Okay, wink, but like, how much?
Right, but...
So the idea of selling dead bodies, I mean, makes a lot of sense. There's $6,000 to be made, or if you talk to the right person, way more than that.
Yeah, there's like 6 billion people in the world. I'm sure we could find someone that is dead right now, ?
Oh, man. So, where are we here? So, Dr. Hazard...
We're talking about creating cadavers from
creating and selling cadavers. Okay, so good. So after the mortuary moves out of this building that we're talking about, that building eventually passes down the hands through the years. In 1983, it becomes a bar called Wells Irish Pub.
Okay.
Which is why I think it's not impossible that we went there.
It
has beer.
Sounds super familiar, and it was right next to our Airbnb. So I'm willing to
bet. So I'm pretty sure we probably went here. Now, the pub is in the basement of this building, which is where the embalming room and the crematorium had been. Yep. Ownership of the bar has changed over the years, but it's still Kell's Irish Pub, has always been for its pub existence. Mm-hmm. Every single person who has owned this bar swears it is haunted.
Hmm.
Glasses are knocked off counters by invisible hands. Mirrors will sometimes shatter for no reason. And there's a voice of a woman that can be heard shouting through the building with no apparent source.
So it's only like half the pubs in the world is what it sounds right. like. Yeah.
It's really unintelligible. It must be a ghost,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's an unintelligible woman screaming in the basement. Yeah, that's got to be a ghost. Yeah.
Ghost. Yeah. Don't call the police. On All Saints Day in 2005, Karen McAleese.
Yeah.
I think so. You're not, sure. She's the sister of the owner. She saw a tall man in a suit jacket walking toward the end of the bar. And she was watching him as he walked, and he just faded into thin air.
Ooh.
Sometimes patrons of the pub will feel something pull on their pant legs and look under the table to see a small red-haired girl smiling up at them, who then usually promptly disappears.
Ooh.
The going theory on that ghost is that she is a girl who died in the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. She also likes to play with other children. So if you bring kids, they might find a little red-haired girl to play with who is dead.
I mean, honestly, if I'm bringing a kid to a bar, I really don't care who they're playing with. I really don't.
No, please,
I mean,
please, knock yourself out. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, ghosts are real. Who cares?
You made a new friend? Oh, she's wearing a bonnet? That's weird. Whatever. I don't care.
Don't pull the ribbon around her neck. That's going to, don't do that. But
she has a lot of stitches. Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't matter.
Those are cosmetic. It's fine. There's also Charlie, a middle-aged man who likes to show up when bands play in the pub. He is apparently a very happy spirit who dances around the room for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When the music ends, he disappears. There is also the ghost of a man who appears in the mirror on the back wall. He only appears in the mirror as if he's sitting at the table with you. But of course, if you look, there's no one else at your table.
Yeah.
Very, very,
very haunted mansion. Yeah.
All the good ideas are taken.
Yeah.
One night, the owner's mother fell down a flight of stairs in the building,
which was
obviously harrowing. Yeah. Call the ambulance. You know, they check her out.
Mm-hmm.
They take her into the hospital. She's okay. When she's asked about it, she swears and has always sworn to this day that she had been pushed from behind.
Ooh.
And the show Ghost Adventures did an episode at Kell's. Their EVP machine supposedly picked up sounds of people saying, "Get me out of here, do something quicker, and get us Hazard." Maybe it's true. Probably sounded like, they're like, "Oh my God, it's a ghost." I feel like I should also note that I watched clips of this episode for research because, you know, this is a real show.
Yeah.
During the episode, one of the ghost hunters picks a piece of gum off the gum wall and chews it.
Oh, no.
That's... So I don't think that we should really take what they say as as meaningful. It's so fucking gross. But according to a shaman who once visited the pub, there are 19 fully formed ghosts there who haunt the building now.
Man.
It's a lot of ghosts.
Shaman confirmed.
If you're going to believe anyone, you got to believe a shaman.
Yeah. I mean, what do they have to gain by this?
Yeah. They don't need your money or food or, you know.
Yeah.
They don't even pay their bills.
Yeah. They don't have like a Twitch channel or something like that. That's not their game.
They love their OnlyFans channel. They don't need you. They can do it all on OnlyFans. It's fine.
I'm doing this for art. I don't need your $4.99 a month. I really don't.
So that's the story. If you want to go check out the 19 ghosts of the Kell's Irish Pub, you should. You absolutely should. Seattle is a great city.
Oh, it's the hub of the city right there. Pike's Place.
Oh man.
My goodness.
Seattle is a blast. What a great town. And that's the story of Kell's Irish Pub. Patrick, what are your thoughts? What do you think?
We should probably go back. I really think we should.
For this specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
God, it's a great town. I think once we hit all the baseball stadiums, we should just do a highlights tour.
We should go back to the good ones.
Yeah.
Seattle, good one. Hands
Denver,
down. Denver, good one. Good one.
Yeah. San Diego, you didn't get to.
I did not. Yeah.
Tell you what, good one.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I would head back here.
Yeah. You'll figure it out. All right. Well, that is the story for this week. Thank you all so much for listening. All the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media manager is Kai Valonis. And we've had a blast. If you like this, you could go check out Ghost Plus. You can get even more of this sort of thing for not very much money.
Mm-hmm. It's
pretty cheap, really. Pretty cheap. Think so?
Like less than the cost of 2,000 pounds of bison bones. Can you imagine?
Oh my God, way less.
Like, but I swear to fucking God, if you try to pay us in 2,000 pounds of bison bones,
we will accept. All right, we will see you next week. In the meantime, stay out of gum walls and do not chew the gum from those walls, because if you do, it's almost certain that we will talk about you next week on Is This a Ghost? Thank you.